Welcome back to the channel. People have been asking me to talk about the two recent papers in the New England Journal of Medicine about colorectal cancer screening. We've got the blood-based cancer screening test by Guardant. We've got the stool DNA test by Exact Biosciences. These are poised to become lucrative tests that doctors and hospitals administer to patients, or I mean healthy people. We'll see if they make anyone better off. We'll talk about that in this video. So first of all, we have to be clear. Screening is about healthy people. It's not about patients, so I may occasionally make that mistake as I talk through this video. But we're taking healthy people, we're extolling them to come in and participate in some preventive screening program in the hopes that we're gonna make them better off. So let's talk about the history of colorectal cancer screening, let's talk about what we know about these two tests, and let's talk about why I have some reservations about them. So first, the history of colorectal cancer screening. I mean, we have a number of modalities that have direct randomized control trial evidence evaluating whether or not that screening lowers the rate of colorectal cancer death and ultimately all-cause mortality. That's the thing we care about, living longer as a result of screening. When it comes to fecal occult blood testing, FOBT, we have a few randomized control trials that show very clearly that FOBT cards, when offered to patients, can reduce the risk of colorectal cancer death. But we also know that even in pooled analysis, that reduction in colorectal cancer death does not translate into an improvement in all-cause mortality. The other thing to know is the reduction in colorectal cancer death is not 100% from FOBT. It's roughly, for all cancer screening tests, between 20% and 40%. In other words, even the person who participates in the screening program perfectly still has 60 to 80% of the risk of dying of that target cancer. This is something people miss. Screening does not prevent you from dying from colorectal cancer. There are plenty of people who died of colorectal cancer who got all the appropriate screenings. It may reduce the risk of that cancer-specific death a little bit. With FOBT, we have data that does that. We also don't have any credible data that those reductions translate into all-cause mortality benefits. This was also shown in a nice paper by Brett Hauer looking at the average life expectancy gain from cancer screening tests. When it comes to colonoscopy, we have one randomized control trial, Nordic, which has thus far failed to find even a reduction in colorectal cancer death. It might find that in the next analysis, but thus far it's failed to show that. So it does, however, have an increased incidence in colorectal cancer, followed by a subsequent fall in colorectal cancer incidence. And we've talked about that on this channel. I've interviewed Michael Bretthauer. You can go check that video out. I've had a debate with Adam Cifu about this. Check that debate out. Let's turn to the modality that has the best evidence. Flexible sigmoidoscopy. It's not a colonoscopy. You don't have to spend all night in the bathroom. You don't have to drink the bucket of glop and poop yourself to near death. You can just get a couple of enemas and have a flexible sigmoidoscopy. It evaluates the left side of the colon, not the right side. And it has shown very conclusively in multiple randomized controlled trials a reduction in death from colorectal cancer, and even in a pooled analysis, a reduction in death from any reason, an improvement in all-cause mortality. It actually, we can say, makes you live longer. In my mind, FlexSig, which is a cheap test, which is a test that doesn't require all the preparation of colonoscopy, should be the de facto standard of care. It has the best evidence. It's bizarre that we do colonoscopy. Why do we do it, you may ask? Well, of course, at the end of the colon is a $1,000 bill and every GI doctor wants to go snag that. No, I'm just kidding. But that's partly the case. There's a big financial incentive to do a colonoscopy. The other reason is I think people genuinely believe that if it works for the left side of the colon, why wouldn't it work for the right side of the colon? There are a lot of reasons to think it might not work the same on the right side, in part because the biology is different on the right side than the left side, and in part that we don't have direct evidence that it works on the right side. We don't have direct evidence that colonoscopy reduces cause-specific mortality yet. But be that as it may, for whatever the reasons, flexible sigmoidoscopy, often a quarter the price of colonoscopy, depending on the place, maybe even less. It's done much quicker. It is, in my opinion, the best screening modality. It has the best evidence. That's not to say that everyone has to do it. If you offer it to someone and they say they are willing to tolerate the slightly higher risk of mortality because they don't want to go through the procedure, I think that's perfectly acceptable. People have the right to take risk in their lives. So the job of a cancer screening program is merely to offer the cost-effective, evidence-based solution to the majority of people, but not to coerce them or compel them to do it, in my opinion. So I think FlexSig wins. Now let's talk about the advances since then. We moved from FOBT to fecal immunohistochemical testing because it offered what we felt was better sensitivity and specificity than the original test. And FIT was also meant to be done yearly. Okay, it's done yearly. And over years, The sensitivity will improve with each subsequent year. This is an important point as it relates to these two recent papers. So we move to FIT for the most part. But again, FIT does not have any direct randomized control trial evidence that improves cause-specific death or even all-cause mortality. Now let's talk about a few years ago, they made a blood-based cancer screening test, and Ravi Parikh and I wrote an article in JAMA where we were critical of the blood-based cancer screening test because it had very poor test characteristics. Enter the more recent New England Journal study. This is the Guardant blood-based cancer screening test, and it's still, in my opinion, terrible. It has terrible test characteristics. It has a 100% sensitivity at finding stage 4 cancer. You do understand that that's not a useful thing to find, okay? If the cancer is already metastatic, you finding it is very unlikely to change the natural history of that tumor. You're never going to cure that person. You're unlikely to cure that person, I should say. And you're certainly unlikely to make them live substantively longer. Screening for stage 4 disease is a fool's errand. What you want to screen for, why we do screening, is ideally you would find early stage cancer and intervene upon it, or precancer and remove it before it would otherwise become a lethal cancer. When it comes to FLEX-SIG, not only can you clip a stage 1 cancer, can identify it and resect it or remove it at the moment, you can also clip advanced polyps, preneoplastic polyps, very high-risk polyps, and that can avert the natural history of the disease. The same is true for colonoscopy. When it comes to this intervention, they're very happy to say they have something like an 83.1% sensitivity for any colorectal cancer, but they have a 13.2% sensitivity for advanced precancerous lesions. That's so piss poor. In fact, that's worse than every other modality. That's worse than the methylated septin 9 test, that old test from a few years ago. That's worse than FIT. That's worse than multi-target stool DNA. That is the absolute worst advanced precancerous lesion detection of anything. It's piss poor. It's absolute garbage at finding those precancerous lesions. So in other words, it might have some sensitivity for cancer. It has great sensitivity for stage 4 cancer. It has very poor sensitivity for advanced precancerous lesions. And it very well could be that finding and removing those lesions is the thing that gives FLEX-SIG both the cause-specific mortality reduction and the all-cause benefit. Okay? So in my opinion, the mere fact the FDA will approve this product without direct randomized control trial evidence that it lowers cancer-specific mortality is yet another failure of the FDA. They just want to let people sell their costly products to the U.S. market. We will have no idea. I'm going to say many more reasons why we have no idea if by introducing this product to the marketplace, we're going to make people better off. But we certainly see already its test characteristics, I think, are quite, pardon my French, shitty. Okay, it's got shitty test characteristics. Okay. I'm not so interested in finding stage 4 disease. Okay, that to me is also one of the problems here. One of the very interesting things is in the paper, they don't present the sensitivity by stage. It's only in the supplement, which I find interesting. They lump stage 1, 2, 3. Its sensitivity is 87% for stage 1 through 3, but the precancerous lesions, advanced precancerous lesions, sensitivity is very poor. It also has, you know, not terrific specificity, so there's a lot of false positive results getting colonoscopy. The next point. Blood-based cancer screening test is only going to be useful if the person comes back and gets a colonoscopy. In this study, to validate the test characteristic, everyone had to have both. But in the real world, when you deploy the test, the authors of this paper and some of the commenters online are saying that what's going to happen is, the beauty of this is you don't even have to poop on the card. When you come to the primary care doctor, we can just draw your blood and we'll just send this test on anybody. Well, the problem with sending the test on anybody is that person might not ever come back to get the follow-up procedure. At least pooping on the card is a compliance device and makes sure you're likely to come back. If you start sending this test on everyone, you're going to find a lot of people who test positive by this blood test who will say, I don't want to have a colonoscopy. No, I'll just keep an eye on it. Can we just follow it? Do I even have to return to clinic? They may just blow you off and ghost you, you know? So we have no idea if you deploy the test in the real world if people will follow up for the colonoscopy. We have no idea if the test is actually finding the precancerous lesions that result in improved mortality. In other words, in the cancer screening model, there are three types of things you can find. You could find the BRRRRs, which are disease states that even if you find and catch and perform surgery on, the horse has left the barn, they're going so fast, they already have microscopic disease elsewhere, you're not going to change the natural history. Stage 4 disease is one of those things, okay? Finding stage 4 disease is not so useful. We don't know if you're finding turtles. Finding the disease that if you otherwise didn't find that would have just gone along indolently, stayed a stage one colon cancer, stage two, and then maybe even declared itself with symptoms in a point where it was still completely treatable by surgery, okay? So by catching it early, you may have done a slightly smaller surgery, but it was just going to be cured with the surgery later. What you really want to find are those cancers that if you find and clip it, clip the polyp and remove the cancer, in the absence of you doing that, it would have become a metastatic cancer. And we have no idea from test characteristics alone if we're finding those tumors. And that's yet another reason you need direct randomized controlled trial evidence that by debuting or offering this test, you reduce cause-specific and ultimately all-cause mortality for people. So that's a failure of the FDA paradigm. They say in the paper that all they have to show is that the confidence interval for sensitivity for colorectal cancer is above 65% sensitivity and they'll get FDA approval. That to me is such a piss poor bar and yet again reflects this FDA, which is an abject failure. They're proving Alzheimer's drugs that don't work. They're proving boosters in babies based on no credible evidence, boosters in people who've had COVID-19, cancer drugs that have no credible evidence, cancer drugs like olaparib in the POLO study, see my prior videos, that are probably worse than the alternatives of continuing chemotherapy. They're proving cancer screening tests that don't work. They're just an agency that doesn't want to do their job correctly. They don't want to actually regulate products in a way that we know they actually benefit the American people. Then the next part of the argument. When you debut the blood-based cancer screening test, when you debut that on the market, the people who are writing the editorials, by the way, we'll talk about the editorial. It's not a good editorial. The people who are promoting this test, they keep harping on the fact that we want colorectal cancer screening rates to be 80%. Why do we want that? Because some organization pulled that number out of their ass. Okay, I mean, it's a made-up number. They're currently at 59%. Okay. Actually, it's probably even lower because some of the statistical errors in how they calculate that percentage, but it's a lot of people are not compliant. And they say, quote, the best screening test is the one that gets done, implying that if we add this blood-based screening test and we screen a few extra people, we bump that up to 70%, that's going to be a net gain. But what they don't know is that the people who are not doing any test, are those going to be the people who do the blood-based cancer screening test and everyone else who is going to do colonoscopy and FlexSig and FIT, they're just going to do the same thing? Or are you going to take people who were going to do a colonoscopy, they were willing to do a colonoscopy, but they got seduced by some poorly done New York Times article fluff piece about the blood-based screening and they do that instead? And as a result of doing that instead, they actually deteriorate the sensitivity of finding these things. Because here in this study, colonoscopy is hailed as a gold standard. It has 100% sensitivity by definition in this study. But they do this instead of colonoscopy. If that's what happens as a result of debuting the test, you actually erode the benefits of screening. I strongly suspect that this is going to lead to an erosion of the benefits of screening because the test characteristics for advanced precancer lesions are so piss poor, you're going to take a lot of people who were going to do something better and they do your piss poor test, and as a result, they have worse colorectal cancer outcomes. So that's yet another failure of the FDA. They have no real-world data of what the introduction of this test will mean in the U.S. marketplace. I've been going on and about the blood test. I think that's because it's more interesting to me. There's one more thing that they note, that as you get older, the specificity gets worse because probably we all have a lot of these cell-free DNA fragments they're looking for are fragments that are more incidentally found in older people as all of the cells undergo aging and mutations and DNA damage, etc. And so actually the test characteristics get poorer in older people. It's an interesting finding. Now let's talk about the stool-based DNA test. When we had the original stool-based DNA test, one of the problems with that test was they compare sensitivity and specificity against FIT, but at a one-time visit. And that's again what happens in this New England Journal paper. They compare FIT and the DNA test. And by the way, FIT is fecal immunohistochemical testing, which is not a DNA-based test, but an immunohistochemical assay. They compare the two at one time. But then they offer that test, Cologuard, every 3 years, whereas FIT is offered every 1 year. But that's pretty stupid, isn't it? If you want to really compare the two tests, you should do it for 9 years or 10 years and then compare the sensitivity over the course of 10 years, where one thing is done every year and the other thing is every 3 years. It's the difference between, you know, if you're running a marathon and you drink a little bit of water at every mile, or you drink a big Gatorade every 3 miles and you compare how hydrate you feel after the first mile. It's not fair. You should at least get 9 miles under the belt so we get some benefit of the fact that in one case, you're actually stopping a little more frequently. And that's the same with FIT. You're going to get an improved sensitivity by doing it every year. versus every 3 years. Why is it every 3 years? It's probably every 3 years because otherwise the cost would be so astronomically bad they wouldn't be able to justify it for most payers. And that's probably why it's stuck at 3 years. So similarly, these one-time comparisons of stool DNA and fecal immunohistochemistry testing are actually pretty useless in my mind. They don't even tell you the test characteristics, because to know the test characteristics, I want to see that over a longer time horizon. And again, I come back to the core problems, which is, at least with the stool tests, one can assume that if somebody's willing to poop on an FOBT card, they're going to be willing to poop on a FIT card or a stool DNA card, and that they have the equally likely to return to clinic. That's an assumption that one cannot extend to a blood-based cancer screening where they'd be much less likely to return to clinic and participate in colonoscopy. At least you can make one of those assumptions that they will follow up at least at the same frequency as they did in for FOBT. But you really don't know what you're getting in terms of cancer-specific mortality reduction over the long haul, particularly when you factor in that FIT sensitivity is going to be much better done yearly. And so I think that's a bigger problem there. I don't want to dwell too much about these. I think FIT, you know, for better or worse, is an option, and it's hard for me to believe that any of these stool-based DNA options have shown even that they're as good as FIT, and certainly not that they're better. But for me, the more interesting story is the blood-based screening, because that's really Pandora's box, because that's when you're going to get a lot of doctors just ordering it as part of the routine blood work. They check the lipids and the CBC and this screening test, and you're just going to get a lot of people who probably get this test done who didn't really understand what they were signing up for. They may get a false positive. They may no-show. They may not want to show. There may be some other people who are going to get a colonoscopy and the doctor just does this instead, and that may erode, and all of this may result in actually worse colorectal cancer outcomes. The last thing I'd say. When you read the editorial, it is, I don't want to say the worst editorial I read, but it's not a good editorial. The person writing the editorial is just, I don't know. It was more of sort of a high school level summary of the field without any of sort of the careful considerations or the many of the facts that I'm laid out for you. What will this actually mean in the real world? It was more of a cheerleading kind of thing. And the editorialist was quoted in the New York Times, again, cheerleading that this is the future, this is where we're headed, and something like that. That's not what we need. We need editorials who actually put pressure on the manufacturers of these potentially multi-billion dollar products to generate evidence that actually informs us whether or not the introduction of those products into the U.S. marketplace will result in better outcomes for people, or no better outcomes, or worse outcomes even at higher prices. And the editorialist was so far from that, it was laughable. The other thing is, when you read the news coverage of this, they keep asking people what they think about colorectal cancer. In the New York Times story, they ask somebody, and it says this person is a consultant for Exact Biosciences. You mean to tell me you can't find someone to talk about this topic who is not a consultant for any of the companies involved in this space? I'm not a consultant for any of the companies developing any colorectal cancer screening test. You could ask me, and I'll give you some much better comments than what you're getting there. So, in conclusion is America is a delusional place. America has lost their marbles. There is one cancer screening test in the colorectal cancer space with the best evidence. That is flexible sigmoidoscopy. It not only has a reduction in cause-specific mortality as an all-cause mortality benefit, you don't have to drink the bucket of slop the night before. You can do two flex sigs. Of course, Michael Bretthauer has some limitations he talked about in the prior podcast, but even most of Europe has been doing flex sigs. Okay? You could do colonoscopy instead. I think there are other compelling reasons to do colonoscopy. It can remove polyps. It is something that has better control. Because anesthesia is given, it can often be less uncomfortable for patients. Because anesthesia is given, there's a perforation rate as well. Okay, you could do colonoscopy instead, and I don't have as strong an objection to that, even though Nordic is, for the time being, a negative study. If you're going to do pooping on a card, let it be FIT. It is cheap, it's done yearly, it has a long track record, it has principles that are quite readily extrapolated from the FOBT studies. The stool DNA, again, I don't know what sensitivity is over the long haul when you do Q3 years versus Q1 year. This stool DNA, again, I don't see any benefit to that. I also, particularly when you compare it against yearly. But I think the stool is already, you're already talking about an inferior option, and the blood-based cancer screening test, I think, is a total disaster. But most importantly, I think setting the goal of 80% is ridiculous. How can you set that goal? Even in the pooled analysis of all-cause mortality in the Annals of Internal Medicine for flexible sigmoidoscopy, the hazard ratio is something like, and some listeners can check me, I think it's 0.997. It's been a few years since I looked it up. But it is almost one. In other words, even if you did it very faithfully for the one thing that has the best evidence of all-cause mortality benefit, the benefit is very slight. So it is ultimately a person preference sensitive question. Do I want someone to go up there and look with the scope? And if the answer is you don't want that, or yeah, it's not worth it for a small increase in life expectancy, then to me, saying no is a reasonable answer. And getting a blood-based test instead, thinking that means no one's ever going to go up there and look, is ridiculous, because the whole point of the test is, and the only way it could possibly benefit you, is if it's positive, someone's going to go up there and look. That's the only way it could possibly benefit you. And if you're not willing to let somebody go up there and look, then you shouldn't do any of these testing, okay? And these programs that try to push it to 80% are delusional. It should be pushed up to as high as people actually want if they're properly informed about the topic. There's no number. Some populations may say, screw that, it's not worth it to us. And other populations might be higher, it might be 100% if they're properly counseled. The gastroenterologists and these commenters on this topic have never embraced anything other than colonoscopy for many years. One, I think their financial conflict of interest, they make a lot of money by doing colonoscopy. But in this case, they're finally getting on the blood-based cancer screening bandwagon. And I wish it were because the evidence is good. I suspect strongly it's because these companies have so much money. They are detailing doctors at a level that we have never seen before. They're giving more payments to doctors, and they're having more ongoing research studies, and they're really cultivating those relationships, and they're engaging in just brute force marketing to push these products, which are very likely inferior to endoscopy, which is the gold standard of care in this space. So, colorectal cancer screening. Do you have to do it? I think the doctor should give you the full evidence and you should decide. And I think target screening levels are crazy. And if we do it in America, we should be doing the cost-effective thing with the best evidence, which is FlexSig. If we're not going to do that and we're going to be crazy, we should do colonoscopy. At least we can find polyps and clip them. And if we're not going to do that, we should at least do FIT. And if we're not going to do that, maybe we shouldn't do anything rather than offer these very inferior tests to people. Inferior or costly. Or costly and inferior, like this present example. So those are some of my rough thoughts in this space. I think cancer screening is one of the toughest things. It's easy to feel upset when you hear about a young person dying of untimely colorectal cancer. I feel upset too. It's easy to wish we could go out there and get rid of colorectal cancer. But the best evidence suggests that even if everybody did it all the time, you know, even in the positive studies, the majority of colorectal cancer is, I shouldn't say if everyone did all that, I should say even in the positive studies, the majority of colorectal cancer is not affected by these screening tests. It only reduces it maybe 20 to 40%. It's not a panacea. There's going to be cancers that occur between screening intervals, even if you do them as frequently as you could possibly want to do them. I should be careful because Brian Johnson might be starting to do it every day. Who knows? This guy, he's got all sorts of wackadoodle ideas about life extension that are entirely unproven in my opinion. Society has to be very careful that just because something is bad, we don't do something stupid in response. But I would say probably one of the great lessons of medicine is that something is bad, and in response, we do something stupid. That's really the lesson of much of the 20th century medicine, doing lots of unproven things. And that might arguably be the lesson of the COVID-19 pandemic. Something goes bad. It was really bad that 80-year-olds died at record high numbers. But we did something stupid in response, which is we closed the schools for the 8-year-olds. I mean, that could be pretty stupid to do if this was the problem and this was the stupid thing you did. And similarly, colorectal cancer is bad. Very bad when it kills 40-year-olds. Lowering the screening age to 45, I think I talked about in some prior videos and some blogs, and a paper in BMJ Evidence-Based Medicine, that might be stupid. We have no evidence, direct evidence that lowering the age actually improves outcomes. Introducing blood-based cancer screening tests to improve the overall percent of people get screened might be very stupid. It might erode the benefit of colonoscopy, and it might lead to a lot of people no showing for colonoscopy or for follow-up for this test. It might actually increase the failure rate of following up, and it might actually not change colorectal cancer mortality in the population. So we could be doing something very stupid. The only way to figure out if you're doing something stupid or smart is better studies, and the FDA, this FDA, is so bad, they will not compel the maker to do any good studies. They're settling for these terrible test characteristic studies that have a number of limitations that I've described. That's bad. The real failure is the FDA. When I started my career, I always felt the solution was to have a better FDA. But now, you know, having been in medicine for 18 years, I think I'm starting to sympathize with some of the critics of the FDA who say it actually might be better to have no FDA at all. They just give a false label to things of safety and efficacy. They provide no real standard of efficacy, and they actually just keep prices elevated by their false label and their bureaucratic hurdles. And maybe a world without them at all and a complete laissez-faire marketplace might even be better, because at a minimum, these unproven interventions could not charge an arm and a leg. So I'm starting to become sympathetic to the idea just because they've been doing such a lousy job for so many years. So those are my thoughts. I will be back with more videos. I am, of course, a practicing oncologist and professor of epidemiology and a expert in evidence-based medicine. You can check out vinayprasad.com and go to my publication tab, vkprasadlab.com, and look at our publications. You can check out my UCSF profile, which lists, I think, all of our now 500 plus publications. You can check out my book, Malignant, which is about cancer medicine, and evidence and Ending Medical Reversal, a good book about, I think it has a part on cancer screening in there. I'm on Instagram now. You can follow me there. I'm also on Twitter. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. Follow me on Twitter. Oh, and most importantly, check out Vinay Prasad's Observations and Thoughts, my Substack, where you're going to get a lot of really interesting content, including a latest essay on Andrew Huberman. You got that. I got another nice essay coming to you soon. So, on that positive note, I'll be back with more videos and more podcasts. Plenary Session, Sensible Medicine. We've got a lot in store for you. Until next time.